Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Less than a day remains of a temporary ceasefire in Gaza. The three-day truce is held as negotiators from both sides attend talks in Cairo, mediated by Egyptian officials. While the international community holds out hope for a suspension of hostilities, we turn to NPR's coverage of the conflict.
Climb over a pile of rubble and through a hole in the wall, followed by
many rockets have landed inside Israel. Israeli forces actually say that 57 have landed during the course.
As NPR ombudsman Edward Schumacher Matos receives and investigates listener feedback, he read a number of complaints from listeners about NPR's coverage of the crisis in Gaza as the conflict heated up in July and August. Hundreds of listeners accused NPR of pro-Israeli bias. Many more were outraged by what they perceived as a pro-Palestinian bent. Both sides listening to the same stories and hearing distinctly different things. I asked Edward what kind of specific complaints he's getting about NPR's coverage of the conflict.
Well, generally, people from each side of this dispute see NPR as being biased against their side. They point to different stories, and this is common that folks in looking for bias feel that they really remember, they put the greater emphasis on the stories they disagree with and don't hear as much the stories they agree with or don't remember them as much.
Well, so you go through and track them as ombudsman. How do you even answer the accusation of how bias breaks down, you know, in NPR coverage in terms of pro-Palestinian or pro-Israeli, if we're going to put it in those terms?
Well, I take the complaints very seriously, and I do go back to see, do they have a point? What do they find? And so often they'll point out a certain story, and that story will indeed focus on just one side of the issue or the other side of the issue, but doesn't take into account that there are other stories that say the opposite.
So those are the stories. Do you actually track how the accusations break down?
Yes, I'd say that the complaints probably ran about 60% pro-Israeli and about 40% pro-Palestinian, in the sense that, you know, they're criticizing the stories as being, you know, biased against their side. Curiously, I think that, you know, years ago the breakdown would have been maybe 70-30, mm-hmm. 80-20. So it begins to show a shift that's taking place in the American body
politic.
Right.
It sounds parallel pretty much with the general mood of the country about the conflict.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. I think it kind of reflects American public opinion.
So I have to ask you again, you went through and reviewed four bias stories since the bodies of the three Israeli teens kidnapped in the West Bank turned up on mm-hmm. June 30th. How do you actually calculate bias?
That is so hard. It's a very subjective measure. I have to just try to look at it the best I can. I try to point out different passages in the stories that show different points of view. There is no one objective way of doing this. I just try to give it my own independent look at it, taking very seriously what the complaints are. Put them out there, lay it out for listeners to check my own check on it. I mean, put links to all the stories and let listeners go back and say, well, do they agree with me or not agree with me? I hope what I'm doing is pointing out the many different things NPR is doing at the same time in one place so that a listener, depending no matter where they're coming from on this dispute, can then follow up and do their own research and see if indeed NPR is doing pretty good from even their point of view.
And even after your review, what kind of responses did you get?
I think the response was positive for the most part. I think most people, you know, appreciated that there was a real honest attempt to come to grips with this thing and a place that did indeed pull all of NPR's coverage together so that they could see the bigger picture.
Beyond the criticism of taking sides, how do you mm-hmm. address the charge that NPR is not identifying which side is, quote unquote, at fault in this conflict?
Yes. Needless to say, those who have very strong feelings on the dispute feel that the other side is at fault. There are two levels of looking at this issue of fault. One is who started this particular fighting that we've had for the last month in Gaza. And who's at fault, more generally speaking, in the dispute between Israelis and Palestinians? And in terms of who started this particular episode that we've had, you know, I think the NPR coverage has been very clear in showing that what really ratcheted up the level of violence was the rockets. But at the same time, it shows that there are some longer standing complaints among people in Gaza that they were feeling frustrated about and that Hamas tried to exploit. But in terms of the bigger dispute between Israelis and Palestinians, I do think that NPR correctly takes a framing of the issue that there's no question about the legitimacy of the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've heard a lot of on-the-ground reporting, but also I've heard interviews with very high-level officials from both sides. Again, you know, I dislike using that term, both sides, as if there are only mm-hmm. two sides to this thing. What do you hear from listeners when it comes to analysis?
Yes, I think listeners want more analysis. I do think in the early days of the reporting of this particular conflict, there wasn't that much analysis on NPR. There were practical reasons for that. One, the regular Jerusalem correspondent was on vacation when everything broke out. So you had Ari Shapiro flying in from London to fill in. You had a stringer doing yeoman work. And you had a fast-moving chain of events that you don't have time to do the analysis oftentimes. But NPR, I think, quickly caught up both on air and online.
Well, I know I heard interviews with, for example, the Gazan political scientist Abu Sada and also from the Israeli ambassador Ron Derma. Do you feel like that sort of balance of, you know, hear from one side, hear from the other side, is that essential, that sort of tit for tat in covering a topic like this?
Yeah, I really do think it is. I think that it's good that NPR allows an interview to go on for 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes so that you can really hear someone's reasoning and decide whether or not you agree with them or not. Some listeners will complain, and I can totally understand it, that, hey, why aren't you pushing this guy harder? Why don't we have the other side reported at the same time? Well, for practical reasons, you just can't do it all at the same time. So they'd give, you know, they'll focus on the Israeli ambassador in this show, and in the next show they'll focus on the Palestinian professor or anybody else so that you get another point of view on the thing. And I personally, as a listener, I like to hear what these guys have to say. Even if you know that they're
even
spinning some...
Even if it sounds like spin, you know, through the bullet points?
Yes, but, you know, we're sophisticated as listeners. We know when to think, oh, this could be spinning, this may not be. We do want our hosts who do the interviews to push the guys some, but there's a level of civility that we want to maintain, too, on the radio.
Well, more than once, Edward, and I'm guessing this has happened to you, you know, I've been at public forums or in one-on-one conversations with listeners, and I hear statements like, people need to know the truth. You know, why can't you just focus on telling the truth? And, you know, I always say, well, actually, I'm not going to say what I say. How would you respond to that?
Truth is a very slippery concept. Truth is oftentimes is in the eyes of the beholder. But that said, we do try to come out with some sort of a factual truth. I do think that it is, that NPR has to correct people when something they say is not factually right. That said, the interpretations can be very different. And so one person's truth about interpretation could be very different from somebody else's truth.
Mm. I'm wondering about the whole, you know, we talk a lot about objectivity in journalism, but I'm wondering about objectivity in listeners. I mean, you've been examining this for 3 years as ombudsman for NPR. Before that, ombudsman for the Miami Herald, you know, many years in senior positions for Spanish language dailies and the New York Times. I mean, is it too reductionist to say people just believe what they want to believe?
Well, we all do that. And unfortunately, we're doing it more and more as a society. It's regretful to see the way that we are all flocking more and more to news sites and news outlets that reflect a point of view and that they're our point of view and that it kind of just confirms our own beliefs and makes us harder and more intransigent in them. And it's a shame, and we see it in the polarization of American society today, and it makes it more difficult to have some kind of an amicable political discussion.
Have you ever gotten a letter from someone that says, well, you know, I listened, this really made me rethink my position, I've changed my mind?
Actually, I have gotten that, believe it or not. And I get it so often when somebody starts out very angry and you try to, but you listen to them and take them seriously. Because so often the anger has to do that people feel that no one's actually listening to them. And they can just, either just mouth off to mouth off or, you know, to say stuff that they wouldn't say in polite company. Or they have a genuine frustration. And if you can sort of show empathy for where they're coming from, and then try to explain how there may be another way of seeing this, you can actually get people to say, they might not totally agree with you. They might say, oh, I don't agree, but okay, I understand that other side. And if you do that, you've accomplished a lot.
NPR Ombudsman Edward Schumacher Matos there. I asked friends on Facebook how they are hearing NPR's coverage. Some said NPR is decidedly pro-anything Muslim. Others compared it to Fox News in its pro-Israeli bent. The majority of, and let me highlight, completely self-selecting friends said that, like NPR's ombudsman, they find the reporting to be even-handed. My old high school buddy Daryl posted this: if you're annoying anyone, you're probably doing a good job. Confirmation bias, selective perception, cherry-picking, call it what you will, but humans have a curious way of interpreting information. Whether they're hearing news, combing through horoscopes, or watching a political debate, we seek out information that confirms our belief systems and our sense of belonging. That reminded me of an earlier conversation with Chris Mooney. He's a science and political journalist and author of The Republican War on Science. And he's long been investigating the psychological phenomenon known as motivated reasoning, especially as it relates to climate change denial, and finds that there is a reason why, even when faced with overwhelming evidence to the contrary, people are unwilling to accept certain realities.
The purpose is that it helps you protect your sense of self, helps you protect your identity, and it's actually not necessarily strange or irrational that we would be this way. First, just in general, evolution would have built us to be able to react to stimuli very, very quickly in case we need to get away from them. But moreover, when it comes to beliefs and ideas, you know, we build them up over long periods of time in our mind. We make big investments in them. These are our identities, and it makes sense that we wouldn't just discard them easily. So what's so striking about it is that if you and I look on the outside and we say, that person's being hypocritical, they just changed their position, or, you know, they're moving the goalposts, and we're from the outside, we're saying, well, they're moving the goalposts, but from their minds, they're engaging in motivated reasoning. They don't see the contradiction.
Our investments in identity can lead us to, as the saying goes, hear what we want to hear. And that motivation extends far beyond climate science to sports teams, to interpersonal relationships, to geopolitics. Well, while interested people the world over await results of the mediated discussions in Cairo, you can count on the facts here on NHPR. Up next on Word of Mouth, how the 2011 London riots inspired one woman to embark on a mission to complete 366 days of kindness. Can benevolent gestures help a city heal? We'll find out after the break.